It is also, though, a big day in New York with President Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin and Iran's leader Hassan Rouhani all speaking to the United Nations General Assembly. Later today, Presidents Obama and Putin will hold their first sit-down meeting together in 2 years. There is, of course, no love lost between the two, and a number of new issues causing tension as well. Russia's aggression in Ukraine. News now that Iraq will share intelligence with Russia, Syria, and Iran to help fight ISIS. And further Russian military buildup in Syria, which President Putin says is to fight ISIS, but it's also complicating the civil war between President Assad and the rebels who oppose him in Syria. President Obama addressed that in his speech to the UN today.
The United States is prepared to work with any nation, including Russia and Iran, to resolve the conflict. But we must recognize that there cannot be, after so much bloodshed, so much carnage, a return to the pre-war status quo.
Joining us now is Edward Lucas, who's a senior editor at The Economist. He's with us from London. Edward, welcome back.
Nice to be on the show, Jeremy.
And how would you describe the relationship between these two leaders of these two countries right now? We remember hearing about a reset earlier in the Obama presidency, but is this a new reset?
Well, I sincerely hope it is not a new reset, because that reset was pretty disastrous, both from the point of view of the American national interest and America's allies in Europe. I think that this is a big win for Mr. Putin. He's able to show to his domestic audience that he's no longer an international pariah. He can turn up at the UN, make a speech, and meet the most powerful man in the world. I think the question then is, what's the follow-up? Can he actually deliver anything in terms of peace in Syria? And what would he want in exchange from the United States in terms of European security?
So he doesn't want to come across as a pariah. And I must say, after watching him on 60 Minutes, as many Americans probably did last night, he didn't. He looks like a person that you would say, how can they say such bad things about this guy? He seems like a rational human being.
Yes. Isn't it amazing that the former KGB officer is good at giving a good impression? And his job was recruiting and running gullible foreigners, and he's able to do that on a one-on-one basis or on television. But I think we have to remember how we got into this situation. This diplomatic freeze wasn't because America lost its temper. It's because Russia started threatening its neighbours and then invaded Ukraine and seized its territory and annexed it. So there's a real history here, and you can't put that right just by being charming on television and coming out with a few wisecracks. The bleak truth of this is that the West is pretty desperate. It's played the Middle East very badly, and Putin is coming along with something that looks as though it might have the elements of a solution in it. And we are very willing, too willing, in my view, to engage with him in the hope that might turn out to be reality.
Well, he did talk on 60 Minutes about what Russia was doing in Syria to fight ISIS because, as he said, the U.S. effort to train rebels to fight the militants has failed. Let's listen to him here speaking through an interpreter.
It turns out only 60 of these fighters have been properly trained, and as few as 4 or 5 people actually carry weapons, while the rest of them have deserted with the American weapons to join ISIS.
Edward Lucas, why is Russia expanding its role in Syria and in the Middle East?
There's a number of reasons. One is that it plays very well at home. This is showing that Russia is a global power. It's not just consolidated its position in the former Soviet Union by getting Crimea back. It's now able to strut on the world stage. And Mr. Putin hasn't had to expose his troops in Syria to any huge dangers, but it makes Russia look like a global power. That's one thing. I think the other thing is that having Russian air defences and Russian aircraft in Syria complicates things from everybody else's point of view. It means that the Assad regime is stronger. It's not strong against the ISIS rebels because, of course, they don't have an air force, but it's much stronger against any putative airstrikes from the West. It weakens our ability to put pressure on the Assad regime, which, of course, is Russia's best friend in the region.
And is there anything that the U.S. can do to pressure Russia at this point, given that economic sanctions haven't stopped Russia from continuing its incursion into Ukraine?
There's a huge amount we could do. We just don't want to do it because it would be painful for us as well. Chiefly to go after Russia's dirty money in the West. The tens of billions of dollars that the regime loots every year from the Russian people don't stay in Russia. They're laundered through London and Frankfurt and other financial centres. And we know quite a lot about this. We're just not actually willing to go after that money because it would lead to uncomfortable questions for our banks and accountancy firms and lawyers and others. That's one thing we could do. Another is to go after visas and say to the whole Russian elite, neither you nor your siblings nor your spouses or parents or children can come to the West anymore.
Haven't we already done that to some degree, though?
America's done a very good first step on this with the sanctions you've imposed. They could be wider. Europe's done a reasonably good first step with its sanctions, but we could do a lot more of this.
That's Edward Lucas, senior editor at The Economist, joining us from London, an expert on all things Russia. Edward, thank you very much.
Jeremy, it's always a pleasure to be on the show.